For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Good evening. Anyway, I want to reiterate that it's really a pleasure for us to participate in this memorial lecture in memory of our son Amram, and we very much appreciate your being here to be part of it. It's appropriate, too, because our son Amram, though he was not formerly a rabbi, was a very learned young man. He was an attorney and a small practice with another young man in Washington, D.C. But the key thing about him was that he took time out every single day to study with his partner, Torah. That was an integral part of his day, and it was then unusual, but today it's becoming more and more usual. For example, let me begin with a description of the synagogue which I attend in Jerusalem. It's a large synagogue called the Gra Synagogue. My wife does not attend it. She goes to a different synagogue. We're so frum that we go to separate shuls. You know. she goes to a different synagogue for the simple reason that the Gra shul where I go has a ladies section which makes it impossible for the ladies to see or hear anything. So she's used to Beth Jacob, where we allow the ladies and want the ladies to see everything and participate. At any rate, the Gra Shul is a 24/7 synagogue. It's open 24 hours a day, every day of the week. 24 hours a day. You can walk in there at 2 or 3 in the morning and you'll find people studying. I'm not exaggerating. That's how it is in Yerushalayim and certain neighborhoods. And there is a booklet that the teachers of Torah in Yerushalayim gave out. It's a thick booklet containing all the Torah classes that are given in this one neighborhood, which only consists of maybe 4,000 or 5,000 families, one neighborhood. And it's a thick booklet. And the shiurim, the classes, are given in every language imaginable. Of course, in Hebrew, in English, in French, in Russian, in Spanish, in any language that you want, you can find a shiur somewhere in this community which you can walk from one end to the other in less than 45 minutes. So this is a counterbalance. What's going on in many neighborhoods in Jerusalem is a counterbalance to what's going on in the rest of the world. For example, there is a shiur. One of my friends delivers a class every morning at 4:30 a.m. I said to him, "Who comes at 4:30 a.m.?" He says, "Well, I have a bunch of people who have to commute to Tel Aviv. It's about 45 minutes or an hour away. They come and learn till 5:30 or so. They daven and they go to their job." It's 4:30 a.m. There's a shiur every single morning. So at any rate, this is a counterbalance to what's going on, as I say, in the rest of the world, because we today are living at a time where Jewish illiteracy is at such a, I wouldn't say peak, but it's in a way it's a peak, or it's a depth that has not been seen in Jewish history ever. I don't think there was ever a time, particularly in the United States, where the proportion of Jews who know zero about Judaism is as great as it is in the Western world. So it is comforting that there are places around the world where Torah study is taken seriously and where we have a nice turnout on Monday night to discuss what Torah study is all about. One key, and Rabbi Lam mentioned it already, and I may be touching on some of the things that he already stressed, but one key to understanding the role of Torah study is that in the morning shacharis, in the morning davening, every single day, in the preliminary section, before shacharis begins, you recite a bracha over Torah study. Asher, it's the same bracha that you recite when you get an aliyah to the Torah. Asher bochar bono mikolo amin v'nosel mono es terosa brocha to Hashem nosein haTorah. Blessed are you, God, who gives the Torah. And then there's a bracha following that, also dealing with studying Torah. That is to say, Jewish law says you're not permitted to study Torah unless you recite a bracha first. Interesting. Just like you're not permitted to eat bread unless you recite a bracha first. You're not permitted to drink wine unless you acknowledge God as the author of the wine. You're not permitted to study Torah until you make a bracha first. Which means what? It means the Torah study is not just an intellectual exercise. It means it's something that has to do with the heart. It has to do with service of God. It has to do with reaching out to God. It's more than just textual material. For example, another thing we say in the mornings, these are the things that have no... Elu dvorim she'ein lahem shir. This is a Mishnah. These are the things that have no measure, that you can do without measure. What are they? They have no bounds. How much you leave for the poor in your field, the first fruits, the pilgrimage offering before God, deeds of mercy, study of Torah, and then it goes on. On the following, you will enjoy the fruits in this life, and they will remain as your riches, as your wealth in the world to come. What are these? Important mitzvahs. These are mitzvahs which you're rewarded in this world and the world to come. Honoring parents, doing chesed, deeds of mercy, hastening early to the house of study, morning and evening, showing friendship to the stranger, visiting the sick, dowering the bride, accompanying the dead to the grave, attending funerals, devotion in prayer, bringing peace between man and his fellow man. And then the final climactic line, after all this tremendous catalog of these magnificent mitzvahs, the Talmud Torah keneged kulam. The study of Torah supersedes them all. An amazing thing. How important the rabbis and Jewish people, the Jewish neshama, considers Torah study to be. Because it's not just reading or studying physics or literature or music. It's a fulfillment, as I say, of a religious obligation, just like the mezuzah on the door, just like keeping Yom Kippur, just like building a sukkah. So Torah of study is a religious obligation. Now take a look at the source material here that we have prepared for you in part two, the study of Torah part two in the sources, you have it. Part A, it'll be called the study of Torah part two in the sources. Everybody got it? Okay. Now I'm going to read from the Rambam. Hilchos Talmud Torah, the laws of Talmud, of study of Torah. Every Jewish man is obligated to the study of Torah, whether he's poor or rich, in good health or suffering, young or very old and weak. I remember my late sainted in-law, Rabbi Yaakov Weinberg, the father of Miriam, when he was very, very sick, he was really very sick at his home, used to call his students in every day. He was extremely weak, and he would study with them day in and day out in fulfillment of what the Rambam says. Just because you're weak and suffering, so what? You still have to study Torah. You still have to put on your tefillin. You still have to keep the laws. You study Torah. Even if he's so poor that he's living on charity and begging at doorways, even one who must support a wife and children is obligated to set aside time every day and every night for the study of Torah. And that's another aspect which we maybe will get to a little bit later, and that is that the Torah says you shall meditate in the Torah day and night, which means a separate mitzvah to study in the daytime and separate to study at night. It's a good idea to set aside time in the daylight hours and to set aside time in the nighttime hours. There's a special quality to studying Torah at night that's not available in the daytime. Now, why is Torah considered so primary? Well, you heard a few minutes ago. First of all, it's a preservation of the Jewish people. History shows, without doubt, that any Jewish community that did not stress Torah learning disappeared. We don't have the time to go through it. The communities that had Torah learning flourished. The communities that did not have Torah learning, that did not have yeshivas, that did not have schools for the children, that did not have education for the younger people growing up, disappeared in time. Communities that came over from Europe to the United States and did not stress Torah learning became very, very weak and assimilated. And those communities that stressed Torah learning became very, very strong and very, very powerful. Why? So, number one, purpose of Torah study, reason it's so primary, is because it preserves the Jewish people. Very practical. It just preserves us. It keeps us going. Secondly, as was mentioned earlier, with it and through it, you enter the mind of God. What does that mean? You enter the mind of God. And yet, that's what we're taught. You find out how God thinks, if it's possible to use that term. You find out how God rules His universe. We'll maybe discuss it a little later when we have more time. But this way you enter the awesome area of the mind of God, the sacred territory of what God wants. You find out by studying Torah, and you tread on the temple of God's world. Take a look at the sources again on Numbers C, letter C, 6. Yeah. It's marked as page 18, but it's C6 in the daily morning prayers. You all have it? It says, Avinu Avrahamon, our Father, our merciful Father, have mercy upon us, put it in our hearts, I underscored our hearts, to understand and elucidate, to listen, to learn, to teach, to safeguard, to perform, and fulfill all the words of your Torah's teaching with love. Why doesn't it say put it in our minds? What does it say put it in our hearts? Same belibenu, lohovinu, lohaskil, because Torah study, again, is not simply intellectual exercise. It is something that has to do with the emotions, with the feelings, with the soul, with the heart, and so forth. Now, so what I'm saying up to now is that Torah study is a mitzvah like every other mitzvah, except more important. Now, what is a mitzvah? People mistake the concept of mitzvah. They say, bring me a glass of water, you'll do me a mitzvah. It's the wrong use of it. That's not what we're talking about. It could be chesed to bring a glass of water. It's not a mitzvah. A mitzvah is a fulfillment of the commandment of God. God is a, I don't have a blackboard here, but God is a mitzaveh. We are the, he is the commander. We are the mitzuvah, the commandee, so to speak. And that which the commander commands the commandee to do is called a mitzvah. So the mitzvah is a bridge between the commander and us. It's the bridge by which we touch him and he touches us. That's what a mitzvah is. There are, as you know, 248 negative mitzvahs, 248 positive mitzvahs in the Torah, 365 negative mitzvahs in the Torah, 365 equaling the years of the solar year. You can do one mitzvah a day. You get 365, just teasing you. There's 365 negative mitzvahs, 248 equaling the limbs of the body, positive mitzvahs. The mitzvah also means a tzevet. It's from the word tzevet, which means a connection. And not many people are aware of that. But a mitzvah is a connecting link between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, between God and ourselves. And as you know, the mitzvahs are divided between in different categories. There's Odom LaMakom. Mitzvahs have to do with other men, other people. Mitzvahs Odom LaMachabero, people versus people, and people and God connecting. That's one type. Another category is there are mishpatim and chukim. I'm sure you know all this, but it's important to repeat. There are certain mitzvahs that we readily comprehend. We know we shouldn't steal. We sense in our bodies, in our souls, in our minds we shouldn't kill. Society couldn't live without those laws and so forth. And there are mitzvahs that are chukim that we don't comprehend. Why shouldn't I be able to eat a pig? It's very tasty. That's what I'm told. I mean, how many of you can tell me that it's very tasty? You can tell me this very. How do you know?
Because I was not brought up with any Jewish law.
Oh, they're honest ladies. She was not brought up this way. But now you don't know how to taste it.
I know how, but I won't do it.
You won't do it? Okay. She knows how it tastes, but she doesn't do it. Good. Very good. Okay. So there is chukim and mishpatim. There's a mitzvah. The other chukim we don't comprehend. You know, why should I not be able to shave with a razor blade? Why must it be another? You know, what's wrong with a razor blade? It gives me such a nice close shave. So I'm told. I wouldn't know. You know. What other chukim can you think of? Shotness. Wool and linen together, right. The mixture of wool and linen in the clothes for a man and woman. What rationale can we make for that? We can't. There is a rationale. It's a divine rationale. We don't comprehend it. So that's called chukim. And there's many, many other categories with which we can divide the categories of mitzvahs. Again, Judaism tells us that Torah study is not just for Judaic scholars, but for everybody. Let's take a look at the sources again in B, sources number B. There's some very, very important ones there. That would be on what's noted as part 16, page 16, part B. Torah study is not just for intellectuals. A few very, very important citations. Pirkei Avos. Anyone who studies Torah becomes elevated. Tiferes Yisrael. Anyone who studies Torah becomes elevated. That is, one might think that you can only earn the crown of Torah if he has a great mind. Therefore, the sages teach anyone who studies Torah becomes elevated. Anyone, even someone who is not so clever. I remember when I was a young boy, about 14 or 15 years old, there was a fellow in the yeshiva in our class who was really almost a dunce. A very fine fellow. But, you know, he wasn't smart. He wasn't clever. He was always behind in everything. But he was very, very attentive to his studies. He worked very hard to understand. He was what's called a masmid, extremely diligent in his study. And he worked his way through things that took him hours where it took other boys 5 or 10 minutes. Okay. 30 years passed. I'm in Jerusalem, and someone tells me that Rabbi, I don't want to give his name, let's call him Rabbi Goldberg, we'll call him, is giving a shiur. I said, well, Goldberg's a common name. What's his first name? We'll call him Yeshayahu Goldberg. Yeshayahu Goldberg? Is that the Yeshayahu Goldberg who used to learn, you know, from so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so and so-and-so? Yeah. Anyway, I tracked it down. This was the same dunce who became a great scholar because of his will, because of his desire, because of his dedication to Torah study no matter what. And he powered his way through that brick wall and became a very, very powerful intellect. And subsequently, I met him. And he's a genius. Because it had worked to create a mind like that. So one never knows, right? Now take a look at another on that same section, part B, number 3. The Midrash says, the voice of God at the revelation on Sinai was heard by each individual according to his or her capability. The elderly according to their capability. The young according to their capability. Isn't that amazing? Children according to their capability. Babies according to their capability. Women according to their capability. Even Moshe Rabbeinu according to his capability. Everyone received the divine communication according to his or her capability. That's an amazing citation that should be up in neon lights for everyone in their life. The Torah is addressed to every single Jew, no matter his capabilities or her capabilities, no matter his age, and no matter if he's a child or a mature adult. And final, number 4, in the daily prayers we say every day, grant us our share in your Torah. Ten kol kein v'sorah secha. We all have a share in the Torah. We all are investors in the Torah. We all have a part of it. Let us be worthy, O God, that we should know what that share is and let it become part of us. That's what we say every single morning. I think we're running out of time, but I want to tell a little story. The following story is apocryphal, but it happened actually to my father, Zichron Levracha, who was rabbi for many, many years in Baltimore. He said when he first came to the States in 1927, just out of yeshiva, he was a wonderful young scholar, and he was the rabbi of a little shul in Baltimore. Then it was a little shul, and one night, late at night, he was in his study studying Torah. The president of the shul came in and said, I thought you graduated. Why are you studying? You know? He came home. I remember I was a little boy. He came home and told my mother, Lois Sholem, and the boys, us, how hysterical this was and how little the person understood what Torah was. Because you'd never, never, obviously, graduate from this Torah study. Now, finally, what are the dividends of Torah study? Besides fulfilling a mitzvah, first of all, on a very practical level, you learn new things. There's nothing more pleasurable than learning new things. It exercises your brain. It keeps you young. It keeps you alert mentally. Studying Torah will do that. Torah is not easy. It helps you, discover your heritage. Who you are, where are you coming from, where are you going, where are you today? You have to know these things in today's world. The Torah says, the Mishnah says, the book of Psalms is machkimas pesi. It makes a fool wise, as we saw in that story of that young man. Misamche lev, it makes the heart joyous, knowing that you're touching the hem, so to speak, of God. And because of this great emphasis the Jews have had on Torah study throughout our history, it's no wonder the Jews are known as a very smart people. It's no wonder that non-Jews like to have Jewish lawyers. No wonder that non-Jews like to have Jewish doctors. They may not like Jews, but they want the doctors to be Jewish, and they want the lawyers to be Jewish, because Jews are known to be learned and scholarly and wise. And this all comes from that long, long tradition of emphasis on learning. So the best way to do it, to study Torah, is to set aside time during the day and during at night. One last look at the sources. Source C. And then we'll close and we'll go across the hall for some give and take. Source C. Yeah. There's a whole series of recommendations for success in Torah study. I won't go through all of them, but there are some that you must look at when, at your leisure at home. The more one works at Torah, the more one benefits. And just as we ask God to grant our needs, health, prosperity, and peace, we also pray that He enable us to study and understand Torah. And there are 48 qualities through which Torah is acquired. 48 qualities. Study. I won't go through all of them. Attentive listening, saying the words out loud, intuitive understanding, respect for teachers, fear of heaven, humility, joy, purity, being close with fellow students, discussing with others, moderation in worldly activities, moderation in sleep, moderation in speech, moderation in just merrymaking, slow to anger. Look at all the qualities it takes to acquire Torah. Being happy with whatever you have, never boasting, loving God, loving other people. Going through quickly. Sharing another person's troubles, judging others positively. All of these, many more, we'll go through them, you'll go through them at your leisure, will help you acquire and make Torah part of yourself. Again, underscoring the basic theme of my talk tonight, and that is the Torah is not just a discipline for the mind. Torah is something for the soul, for the neshama, for the heart. It's the attachment that we have to our Creator. Thank you very much, and we'll continue in a few minutes in the other end of the hall.
For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.